Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get out your brooms. The most cliche way to start the show. Just the lowest hanging fruit. Penn State sweeps Illinois on the season. Three-peat of beating the Fighting Illini this time. The biggest game of the season because it was the biggest, it was the latest game of the season. 79-76 in the second round of the Big Ten tournament. Nate Bauer, our recruiting and basketball insider for Hoops. Dude, not only did they not play on the first day of the tournament, they won their first game, and they're on to the next round. How long has it been since you've been in a position to talk about a basketball team doing what they're doing now?
Well, not that long. I actually had this later in the show, but COVID disrupted what was an excellent season in 2019 and 2020. So yeah. It's not as though this is some... Right, because the stat just keeps getting used. Oh, it's been since 2011, and it's the longest drought in the Big Ten since Penn State has been to the NCAA tournament. But no, there have been some moments for this team and for this program. But yes, at the same time, this is a significant accomplishment. It is a big deal to have, beaten Illinois three times, to advance to play Northwestern on Friday night. All of those things are nice and good for Penn State basketball, but nothing is more important than the end game of, hey, these guys set out before the start of the season to get to the NCAA tournament. They were determined. They thought they had a special group. They thought they were in a position to win games with an unconventional style of play. And they have by virtually any metric achieved that.
Yeah.
So it's a huge deal. And beating Illinois was the gatekeeper to unlocking that, right? If they lose to Illinois, like we talked about kind of earlier in the week, it's a very nerve wracking Sunday, right? Sitting Friday and Saturday until Sunday afternoon for Penn State basketball. That would have been white knuckle time, but instead you win. And these were both updated this morning. Jerry Palm has Penn State as a 10 seed playing Iowa State in Sacramento, and Joe Lunardi at ESPN has Penn State as an 11 seed facing Kentucky in Albany in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So both of them, these are kind of the foremost bracketologists, right?
Yeah.
Both of them have moved Penn State from that mix of bubble teams who were the last four in or the first four out into a kind of secure spot of being a seeded team. And so they're more or less going to be in the NCAA tournament, barring something absolutely wild. And even then, I don't think that there's enough things that could possibly happen that would disrupt it at this point.
So I did some quick math while you were talking, and I understand what you're saying about 2019. I agree with you. I think we don't give that team enough credit for what they had done. However, I did the math quickly. Two times in 12 years is still not a lot. Since 2011, two times, including the one that we're talking about right now that we're living, that is not a lot of times to the NCAA tournament. So still a monumental accomplishment by this team. And you laid it all out perfectly. Last night was a huge win for them. What do you want to get into the game now? Or do you want to kind of get into more of the setup of kind of the implications of where we are?
Well, let's just start by laying the groundwork of what else is happening, right? Because it's not just Penn State. It's what does the rest of the bubble look like? So yeah. On one side, Penn State really, I'm not going to say eliminated, but took most of the bubble bursting element of this out of play, right? Yeah. So Michigan losing to Rutgers winning. Both of those teams were kind of in that mix of bubble teams. In the Pac-12, Arizona State beat Southern Cal. Oregon beat Washington State. In the ACC, North Carolina lost to Virginia. Clemson beat NC State, and Nevada lost to San Jose State. So it was a mixed bag in terms of other bubble teams, you know, kind of dying and or advancing. But like I said, they're just by winning that game, it puts Penn State in a position to, you know, to feel pretty comfortable. And now they can go into kind of the rest of the Big Ten tournament, which is very interesting to me. It allows them to approach the rest of the Big Ten tournament as, okay, the stress of making it is more or less gone for the NCAA tournament. And now you can just look at it as an opportunity because there is no reason. Penn State's already beaten Northwestern at Northwestern, and you know, the potential semifinal matchup is with Indiana, possibly. Mm-hmm. So you know, these are teams that Penn State has played well and beaten previously this season. You know, Maryland beat Minnesota, so basically, if the winner of Maryland and Indiana is who Penn State would face next, if Penn State got past Northwestern, like that's you're not shaking in your boots about any of those matchups that you
have to face with. Zach Edey, like you don't have to face like a big that is going to cause significant problems. Now both of those teams can still cause you problems. Penn State's not bulletproof by any means, but I do want to get into the game a little bit here. They finally are playing up to their potential of more than one guy showing up. Jalen Pickett did not have a good game for most of the game, and Cam Winter playing good basketball is a status changer for this team. Like this is unlocking a lot of different stuff for them.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say that. I don't know if I would phrase it that Pickett didn't play well for most of the game. He wasn't scoring for most of the game, but he was setting up others.
That's what I mean. Like he was not putting backpack with everybody on his back and carrying them uphill. He was doing a bunch of the other stuff.
He had 41 points the last time these two teams played. So to come out of this with 12 does not reach that level, obviously, but also had 8 rebounds and 8 assists. And a big part of those 8 assists were Andrew Funk knocking down threes, Cam Winter getting to the basket, hitting that mid-range. So when you've got a stat line that looks like Funk has 20, Cam has 18, Lundy has 17, and Pickett has 12, you can very much live with that. And not to be overlooked, Kanye Clary was a real boost for Penn State's offense when they kind of built that lead in the first half. So it's a complete team, and it's important for them to be a complete team. When they're not a complete team, their potential diminishes greatly. But if everybody's going and it's not some wild, you know, hope, like a wish on a prayer that this is a Penn State team that can have everybody going at once. They are absolutely capable of doing that. It doesn't take like all the stars aligning for them to have that. But when it does, it's very potent and powerful in terms of their ability.
Yeah. The first half, and I know that even I've done this of Penn State living and dying by the three throughout the season. But looking at the way the offense operated in the first half against Illinois, they weren't shooting the ball particularly well from three, but you have guys creating their own shots and Winter. And I know you've talked about this aspect of his game and Clary being a part of that conversation as well. Those guys creating their own shot and getting some mid-range looks that aren't terrible. That's huge. Yep. Like that creates a third dimension to the offense that Penn State has not consistently had, but they have in this winning streak, 5 of 6 games. So it's the, you know, I'm really impressed by their ability to evolve this late in the season.
It is going to be, and I'm like spoiling future stories, but it will be the story of Penn State's season that Micah Shrewsbury and his staff figured out Cam Winner. That will be the story. Is they brought this guy in and he was an excellent mid-range basketball player joining a program that prohibits mid-range shooting. Like he is a scorer. That is what he is there to do. That he is a dynamic scorer whose game aligns, it just so happens, with the worst shot in basketball. But when you open the door to a little bit of wiggle room, and Micah talked about this earlier this week on Monday, he talked about it. When you open the door to, hey, you do what you do best, you be you and take the shots that you're comfortable with, that you are proficient with, because look, that's going away if Cam's not hitting those shots, but he is. He is hitting those shots, and so it's okay for him to take him. But also, nobody else is allowed to take those shots, right? Like that was the thing that they were always concerned with was, okay, it's fine. Maybe it's okay if Cam takes them, but if he's taking them and it filters out to Seth Lundy, where Seth Lundy is all of a sudden starting to beat guys off the dribble and pull up, right? Like, you don't want Seth Lundy dribbling the basketball. You don't want him going halfway to the rim and pulling up for a jumper. So if you can avoid that, and that's what they managed to do, it has been a world of difference for what Penn State has been over these last 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, because it provides what it to me, at least what I'm seeing, is it's provided a floor for when the offense bottoms out from a shooting perspective, because teams are playing ball screens really hard. They are playing the perimeter really hard. And if you don't have the size, and this is where you don't have like a lottery pick player, right, that can blow by, get to the rim, and get the and one. But if you can at least get some points by threatening guys, pulling up, and shooting somebody, some element of the offense, it creates this, you know, floor to the offense where you're still generating points. And I know that that's been a problem at times for other teams. By the way, you mentioned the Michigan and Rutgers game. I feel like I have to do an apology tour to the Penn State basketball team, for they only went on a 9-minute scoring drought. Michigan, what was it? They went on a 19-minute scoring drought against Rutgers.
A field goal drought. Yeah,
that is insane. That's nuts.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah, for sure. Other elements of this game, just to me, like just kind of talking it out here. Early in the game, I know that this is going to be a conversation as we get into some of the post-game comments, but I am impressed with this team's evolution overall, and I know that he did not have a great game, but Kebijai is giving you more now. And I said that a couple weeks ago, but it's really starting to show up. These freshmen, you know, the conversation in football is like, at this point, they're not freshmen anymore. They played a bunch of games. Yep. Keba has been working in the gym. It's clear he's fighting back. He's able to hold up more against Big Ten bigs. The foul trouble was one thing, but they're having to work for it more down low. And I thought that was an encouraging sign. I don't know it's going to give you anything this year, but you and I were talking about encouraging signs for the future too. And like,
sure,
him turning the corner now, he's got a full off season after this. It is a very encouraging sign for Penn State. And if he gives you anything down low, it is a huge bonus that gives you that balance, another element to your team that you haven't had for most of the season.
Yeah, I don't know that he's destined to be a dominant, right, like physical specimen of a big who's just bulky. That's not him. Yeah. He's athletic. He's svelte, right?
Yes.
Like I think that it's important to understand who and what he is, but I do think that yes, the light has turned on for him. He's been able to do some things. And to be honest with you, it's there's a few things that I don't necessarily know all of the answers to, right? The one side of it is, okay, Keba and Mikey Henn were more or less out of the game due to foul trouble, right? Yep. So they didn't really play, right? Henn finished with 7 minutes. Kebba finished with 11 minutes. And so Penn State was playing small ball for the duration of the game, just given this contrast in styles. You had an Illinois team that was determined, absolutely, especially once they kind of figured things out midway through the first half,
yep,
of the key to Illinois winning this game is just going to Danger all day. Just give him the ball, get inside, and one of two things is going to happen. Either he's going to make the shot or he's going to get fouled. And either way, Illinois wins. So that was how Illinois took a 10-point deficit and got it into a 1-point deficit at the half, and then obviously eventually took it to a 6-point lead in the second half. But also, and this is, I'm sure people are wondering out here, no Evan Mahaffey, right? No Evan Mahaffey, who can give you some help there, not necessarily in the post, but he's a physical big body who gives you at least a little bit of size. And so that's that's a question that I have as
rotational energy. Like, I think he gives you a little bit more quickness too.
It depends. It depends. And the answer that I gave on Thursday night to people that were asking is he has had issues. They have been dissatisfied with what he brings to the floor defensively. And that is, if you're Andrew Funk, you can get away with that because you're scoring 20 points and you're making 6 3-pointers. If you're Evan Mahaffey, you can't do that. And really, it's the reason that Mikey Henn wasn't on the floor at the beginning of the season, right? Like, it's just, there's a threshold to, hey, these baseline, elements have to be met before we're even going to consider putting you on the floor. And I think my guess is that, reading between the lines, that's probably what was the case last night based on the preparation this week leading into that game.
You have called this team previously, you know, in their slumps in February, a mentally fragile team. Have they have they proven that they're not anymore? Because you mentioned the storyline, or at least the game script of this game. Get out to a 10-point lead, 1-point lead by halftime. Down by 6 in the second half, roaring back to have a 10-point lead late that you don't quite seal the deal with free throws, but you still get it to where it's even. It's a better finish than the 3-pointer that goes in at the very end, where it's really 79-73 and you have a 6-point win. It comes down to a 1-point game win, but you had a comfortable lead at the end. So have they proven that they are no longer a mentally fragile team, or are you still thinking that might rear its head at some point in a big game?
I think that two things are at work here. One is that they are, I don't know if fragile is the right word, but it's almost like, and Micah Shrewsbury had a comment, we don't have it pulled here, but it's like a sports car, right? That is really high end. And the reality of those cars is they're extremely powerful, but need to be babied and fine tuned. Right? Yes. If you're not dealing with, and in no way am I a car guy and or an expert on these things.
Neither am I. But this is a great conversation for two non-car guys to have.
But I understand, at minimum, I understand the cliche of, hey, if you aren't doing all of the right things in terms of how you handle this product, you're going to find yourself in trouble. It's not like driving my Corolla, right? Like, that's not how it is.
Part of the love is that you got to get your hands dirty and get in there and get into the all the parts of it to make it a precision machine.
Yeah, exactly. And it is a precision machine, and they're guys who react and respond to different things, and it took him, I think, most of the season to figure out what those things are, right? Mm-hmm. Andrew Funk, don't scream at him. Doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Cam Winter, absolutely the same thing. Like, these are thoughtful guys. They're not necessarily built the same way that John Hara was, right? You could yell at John Hara, even though there was, not often many reasons to do so, because he was always bringing that intensity himself. It's just a different dynamic. And I think that it took Micah a long time this season, and not through any fault of his own. He just you didn't have that experience. You had so many new pieces into the program, 8 newcomers in the program this offseason, with only really 3 returning guys who had played last year. So
yeah,
that balance of figuring that out took some time, yes, but also he's managed to unlock this other side of it, which is if you're doing all of the right things and you are handling these guys emotionally and in all of the elements that make them what they are, guess what? You can get beneath the surface and get a very tough, willing, hard-nosed team, even though they're undersized, right? Like, even though they're not a bulky, like, I mean, you saw it last night. It was so clear.
It's not a Big Ten running game, right?
And Illinois was playing basketball the way that Brett Bielema wants Illinois to play football, just knocking, bowling you over. And for a good stretch of the game, Penn State was susceptible to that. And it was right. But still, they walled up enough. They stuck with it enough to get stops when it mattered down the stretch. And they kept playing. So, I mean, it was absolutely a credit to them. And this evolution that you've seen over the last couple of weeks of becoming, transforming into a team that can keep it together and up their best selves late in games.
And this is where we're going to get to a couple clips here back to back of talking kind of around those topics. Specifically, we'll get to Andrew Funk talking about the technical foul and what actually he thinks happened after that, which is something we've discussed a lot this season.
Yeah, definitely. And like, I think it kind of goes back to the earlier questions about how we're battling down low in the post. And obviously he got an end-one off that play, but it almost feels like we get a little bit of break with the technical foul and shooting 2 free throws. And it's like we said again, just like using that momentum. And we know we've played in a lot of tight games as well as the other thing. So trusting the guys around you to make plays and make shots. And then I think that kind of led into us really bearing down on defense, which was the bigger momentum swing. And, you know, we really held them, you know, aside from that last 2 minutes where they're kind of getting downhill, for shooting free throws and whatnot. We got some big stops that allowed us to, you know, kind of extend the lead.
3-point shooter talking about getting defensive stops and that being the catalyst for this team. Yep. Micah Shrewsbury had this to say before that, but also kind of this is in the same thread of their new mental toughness.
Just a lot of trust in each other. I think that's the biggest thing. We've been through a lot. We've been through a lot this year. And highs and lows throughout, and not just like the season and like games. But there's a belief in each other that no matter what happens, we're going to stay together and we're going to fight. Like, you know, we're undersized. We battle, but like when the game's on the line and things aren't going well, like this group is really, really tough at the end of the day, really tough. And we just continue to fight. We continue to fight. We continue to fight until the tide starts turning our way.
That is not the description of this team a month ago, maybe, the beginning of February.
Yeah.
So what do you make of the playing through the defense and having that be the emotional identity of the team? Are you buying that? Part for this, for the way this game went.
I'm buying that Micah has begged for that from this group and has had trouble wrangling it for a good portion of the season. But is that the key to this late season stretch? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's been a big part of it. It's impossible at this point to narrow it down to one thing because so much of it has happened all at once. Cam Winter being better is concurrent to them getting defensive stops and turning those defensive stops into success offensively when things aren't going well offensively. They've still had droughts, right? They've still had scoring issues at times this season, but hey, here's what happens. You watch more college basketball, you see that everybody does this. Everybody has scoring droughts. It's a game of runs, cliche as that may be. But the thing that I think is so different is, you couldn't have said that, what Micah Shrewsbury just said about the game at Wisconsin in January, a 3-point loss where there were multiple opportunities to win or tie that game. You could not have said that about a 20-point loss at Rutgers that was really within reach with 10, 15 minutes to play in the second half. You could not have said that about the game at Nebraska. Like there was a consistency to that in that middle stretch of Big Ten games that has since flipped. Even at Clemson, a game that Penn State came back and was able to push into two overtimes earlier this season. They still lost it. All so many of those close decisions, those close games that they had, either they were beating you by 10 to 15 points or Penn State was losing.
Yep.
Right. That has not been the case down the stretch. They have had these tight games that, yeah, they may be in the 5 to 8 point window on the final score, but have been in doubt with 2 minutes to play. And Penn State has transformed those prior losses into wins down the stretch. And I think it's really freeing. It's because now you see it. You see them playing with that confidence. They have a belief that they can make plays when it counts down the stretch. There's no hesitation. There's no fear. You've got Miles Dredd shooting again. Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, remember that? You've got Cam Winter taking shots, feeling comfortable. Andrew Funk pulling the trigger. You name it. It's just all there right now. And so I think that they're still headed for more of these types of games. You can't expect to just walk through games at this point in the season, but it's where you want to be. It's the makeup that you want to have as you're going into this stretch of games.
Yeah, veterans that believe in themselves and are playing together and all of the synergy of what you expected of this team. I have just a total aside here. I'm happy for Miles that he's getting his shot back. I'm also happy for all of the announcers that have been calling him a three-point specialist and have been saying how good of a three-point shooter he's been outside the context of what's been happening in the second half of the season, which is he has been a brick. And, I'm just glad for the narrative that it is actually correct now, because listening to people say he's a great 3-point shooter, I'm like, but you got to kind of not look at his career average. You got to look at what's happening. And now it's all, at least for the moment, clicking together. So that's great for Penn State, and it's great for my sanity watching the games.
Well, and I mean, how do you say this other than his head being in the right place at the right time turned that game? And you ran the Andrew Funk clip, but that really upended what had been all momentum for Illinois at that point in the game.
Yeah.
Illinois was just kind of rolling. Danger was obviously feeling excited enough to inadvertently, obviously, headbutt Miles Dredd, but it turns into really a 7-0 run on the backside of it, like immediately. Yep. And so that turned the game, and it got into a little bit of a back and forth, but then Penn State made plays down the stretch.
Yeah, and he's been good as a five. You know, he's been good as a five defensively for this team. I took a little bit of time just watching him and Danger fight together down in the post, and like his initial, like, he does a lot of things really well that you want a big man to do when Danger's trying to set up and get set deep, and he's pushing back, and he's got that beef behind him to actually push back. You know, like, he does some things good defensively that you don't see. But, you know, the complete game and everything that you expect of Miles Dredd, it's good to see it all come together. And it's, you know, you mentioned all of the parts of this team clicking at the same time. They have an unorthodox way of being difficult, especially.
Yeah, here we go.
With booty ball.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, we buried the lead here 28 minutes in, and we haven't even talked about the cat fighting in public that we're doing.
Yeah. So let me, I'll set it up here. After the game, Brad Underwood, and you should just run this clip, but do that. Let Brad Underwood talk.
You can't do it better than this.
They go to, booty ball, and, it's really, really hard to guard. And, when you can keep the possession of the ball for 12, 13 seconds, 10 seconds, and just keep backing up, and you have no recourse in how you guard it because you can't touch them, it becomes very challenging. And if you double, he sprays it. So, they have the rule in the NBA that eliminates that, but they don't in college. So
he is arguing that, and Illinois players were arguing in the postgame, that they can't touch him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is okay. From this perspective, and given the season that Pickett has had and the complaints that Penn State has had, obviously we're in it, right? Like, we're paying attention exclusively to Penn State. And so yeah. I do think that if we're being honest, there can be at times a blind spot of, oh, well, Pickett's getting fouled all the time and never gets a call. It's probably closer to the middle. But on the other side of that, listening to Brad Underwood complain about this, and Hawkins complained about this in the post game, was like, what?
Yeah.
Especially given the nature of that game.
Danger's 260 pounds and basically runs through people as his offense. And Penn State's bigs, if you include Miles Dredd, had 12 fouls between the three of them, right? Somewhere in there. Like, I think they all ended with four. So that's
yep.
That's what are you talking about? What are you talking about? That's exactly, and this is what Micah Shrewsbury had to say in response to Booty Ball.
Just taking advantage of what we're allowed to do, right? Like, we've been doing it all season. That's all he's doing is playing basketball. You could say, like, yeah, he's got the dribble and he's backing people down, but like, they're playing booty ball in the paint. Right, they're doing the same exact thing as us, just from a different position on the floor, the way they were posting Danger, the way they were posting Hawkins in the middle of the court. We just choose to start it in a different area. So, I don't know. He's a good player. It's hard to stop. It's hard to deal with. That's why he's an All-American.
The joy on his face talking about that, you know, I know that we're doing it on the podcast here, but he, I think, delights from the frustration that this causes the other head coaches. Like, it seems like that was a bit of an enjoyable thing of like, yeah, we won the game. I don't care.
Yeah, it's just a point of, I don't think irony is the right word, but it's like, hey, If you were an unaffiliated observer of that game last night, you had no rooting interest, yet you weren't covering either team, and you were used to watching basketball, college basketball, outside of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You would have watched that game and thought to yourself, Illinois, their strategy is to foul. It is to play defense in a fouling nature, so much so that you are forcing officials to make calls. It is literally football on the hardwood.
Yeah.
And so you're like, if that is the mindset and the perception of what that game was last night, was Illinois just being super physical, super aggressive in every realm of the game, which is fine. Yeah.
On the perimeter as well. There were a lot of hand fouls and grabbing fouls on screens too.
But if that's the case and that's how the officials are calling it, then Penn State has to adjust to it. Fine. All of that is totally fine. There are qualms to be had, but overall, okay, you get the point. But to then come back and say, hey, this is a deeply unfair element of college basketball.
Your 6'4" guard is playing too physical.
It's playing too physical. And we have no recourse. There's nothing that we can possibly do to figure this out. And you know what? He's right. There is nothing that you can do, because what Pickett does is either you're going to double him and that will leave open four other shooters. Somebody will be open. He'll find them and he'll make the pass and they'll make the shot. Or you're going one-on-one, and yeah, Pickett's either going to get fouled, which doesn't happen very often, or more likely, he's going to make a shot. He's going to take a good shot with space, and he's going to make it. So
early in the game, they weren't falling. The difference is early in the game, he was getting into those situations where he's kind of given a pull back in the middle of the key, and you missed a couple of them, and then they started to fall late in the game. So it was it wasn't even effective until late in the game. So I think that's why there's a little bit of sourness coming out of the end of the game for Illinois, because it's like it was the last thing that happened, even though the strategy has not worked for Penn State in the past. this strategy doesn't always work, because when you space the floor and you have a defender that can defend Pickett and you plaster the pass, there's nowhere to go. Like, it is also something that has been defeated this year. It's not like this is unguardable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, Pickett's been great, and he does create a matchup problem, because if you put somebody bigger on him, he's fast enough to get around him. He's fast enough to make a play to the basket. But if you're putting a same size or lesser size guard on him, yeah, he's going to do what he wants. He's going to, because physically he can do that. So it's interesting. And it's also something that, if you didn't know the context, Underwood complained about this after the 41 point game. This is a carryover of, well, there's nothing that we can do. And so it is what it is. But, for Micah Shrewsbury and for Penn State, it is what has delivered them the success that they've had this season. They're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah. So the success they've had is, as we started at the top of the show, being in the NCAA tournament. Like, they're in. So what is the going forwardness of this, where they play, if you're listening to this before, they're playing tonight at 6:30 on BTN. What's to come for this team?
I think a competitive at minimum game tonight, if not a win over Northwestern. I kind of touched on this at the beginning of the show, but they can play freely, and maybe they don't even want to, because I was actually considering how to frame this. It's like, okay, they've gotten to the NCAA tournament. Now they can take a breath. I don't think they want to take a breath. I think that they realize and recognize that the pressure has had them somewhat on edge over the last 3 weeks, but that has been a good thing. It hasn't been all consuming, which was a problem, I think, for them earlier in the season, was that they were living and dying by every single thing. Well, once they ran out of chances, without Rutgers loss, they ran out of chances. And so it turned into, okay, you got to win now. There is no more options.
Yeah.
So they have used that, and it has spurred them on, and now they're playing like a team that believes it has the formula to beat anybody, right? And that's the key here, is that there's nobody in the Big Ten that they feel like they can't play with, and that includes Purdue, based on how they played the first half at that Palestra game.
This group is together. We're smart. We're tough. I love this group. We want to keep playing here. I'm not going to put anything in front of tomorrow's game. Tomorrow's game is the most important game of our season, because it's our next game, and that's, we're going to play as long as possible, man. I'm having fun. I'm having a lot of fun coaching these guys. I think they're having a lot of fun. They're having a lot of fun playing with each other.
We want to go 1-0.
Yeah.
Win the next game. The 1-0 mentality. Familiar. I don't know if that was a good James Franklin or not, but that was my best shot.
Yeah. It's been an interesting pivot, and something that has worked. It's worked for Penn State basketball, and let's be honest, it's worked for Penn State football as well.
Yeah.
So,
well, we've got a game tonight at 6:30. We may be back for a quicker podcast after that on Saturday. See how the wind blows. See what's going on there. But then, of course, Nate and I will confer about what we're going to be doing for Selection Sunday, and have some coverage of Penn State basketball in the dance, in the big dance, Nate. Here we are. It's only been since I was a senior in college, and then 2019. So it hasn't been that long.
I just have to say, and this is in no way a boast, though I recognize it may sound like one. Our first podcast for this show, I said that they would go to the NCAA tournament this year.
You did.
Right. That was before they started playing games.
You also said they'd be a historic 3-point shooting team. I remember that for Penn State.
I did say that as well. And what I will say is, I mostly just feel great about that prediction based on the fact that it looked very much like I would be wrong.
I was just thinking about that the other day.
Like 3 weeks ago.
Nate's got to feel good about this 5-6, five wins in six games, because they pulled it out of the fire to make you correct about that.
Yeah, because I was starting to look very, very wrong in terms of what they were going to end up doing. It looked like the naysayers who were arguing that this was a team that could not compete against size were going to have the upper hand, and I feel validated that they have managed to put that out there and have the answer. They do. They have the formula. They have something that can compete, and they're going to keep doing it. So,
and
we'll see.
Let's be real, Nate. The reason that they have done this, the reason they've gone through this gauntlet, through the fire, like a phoenix, have risen and are now an NCAA tournament team, is to give you message board ammunition. That is why they've done it. They 100%. Want to make sure that you have a bulletproof defense to say, I was right about my prediction.
Yep. They knew that I put my reputation on the line and wanted to back. No, I'm kidding. But in any case, it's good for Penn State basketball, and we'll catch up with everyone after what happens next, which is Northwestern tonight. So,
all right. So hopefully you're listening to this when it comes out. We are recording this in the morning on Friday. If not, this is a glorious send off into whatever happens after the game. So as always, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Thomas Francaire. That is Nate Bauer. This is the Penn State Blue White Illustrated Hoop Show. We will be back sometime in the near future. Stay tuned. Always subscribe to where we get your podcasts so you don't have to worry about our frenetic schedule. You'll just get the podcast when it comes out. We'll talk to you then.